We are excited about our next guest. He is a legend of the Sydney to Hobart.
Probably listening to that thinking, what the hell am I coming on here? It is a sports show, Lindsay, I promise you.
Allegedly. But yeah, it's just incredible, the record that he has set up. He's going to be the skipper of Kealoha 2. And of course, it starts at Boxing Day about 1 p.m, we reckon. It's great to have Lindsay May as our legend of the game. Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning, guys. And firstly, I'm not the skipper of Kealoha 2. I don't want to upset Paddy Broughton. He's the skipper. I'm the navigator.
Sorry. But let's check this. I think you're at the helm of, trying to think of the name of the boat, when it went over the winning finish line.
Okay. Love and War in 2006. I was the skipper navigator of Love and War in 2006 when we won on corrected time, on handicap.
Okay. All right. Well, Lindsay, we asked this of all of our special guests for our segment on this one. How did sailing become a part of your life?
Well, I was actually a surf lifesaver and a competitive swimmer, and I was in North Wollongong and then Bondi Surf Clubs, and then a mate of mine took me sailing, and that was 1971, and since then I've been sailing. I did my first Hobart in 73, and I've done all 45 since then.
Wow. Lindsay, 46th, as Jimmy said, Sydney to Hobart race this year for you. What is the magic of this race that keeps bringing Lindsay May back every year?
Well, you have a great time. It's a competition, obviously. I'm competitive. There are years when you're on boats that are really competitive, and there are other years when the boats are not so competitive. You know, when you've got 80 boats out there, there's probably about 20 boats that are really in it. The crews, they've done the work, the money's been spent on the boat. But to me, I liken it to a bit like the football club end of season trip away without the alcohol. And, you know, you just have a great time with a bunch of people, and you never know what's going to happen over the 2, 3, 4 days that you're going to be out there.
I can imagine the change in technology has been pronounced across 46 years, Lindsay. What's been the greatest godsend for navigators, and what's been some of the more interesting or less important bit of technology that's come through?
Right. Well, I guess the most important for navigators is global positioning, the GPS.
Right.
Up until 1983, all of our navigation was done using a sextant and sight reduction tables where you calculated your position, and that would take you about probably an hour to take the sights and then go down and work them all out and plot them on a chart and do that. And then in 1983... the rules were changed and we were allowed to use satellite navigation, but we didn't have GPS then. We had what was called transit. So about every hour and a half, you got your position. GPS came in, I think, about 1993, and that absolutely revolutionized the navigation. And the most important thing about that was really safety, was that you knew where you were. If you were in really rough conditions previously, if you knew where you were within a couple of miles, you were doing well.
Right.
So if someone went overboard or a boat's in strife, then we have a very good idea of where it is. And now, of course, we have the emergency position radio beacons, EPIRBs, which tell you exactly where you are.
Well, I guess, Lindsay, the horrors of 1998 would have ushered in this era where safety now is just so important, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I guess every year, well, really even before 98 and post 98, safety has been prominent. The Cruising Yacht Club of Australia, that runs in association with the Royal Yacht Club of Tasmania, have led the world from a long, long time ago with regard to safety. They had some people on their committees back in the 70s, a fellow by the name of Gordon Marshall, who's no longer with us. Gordon was an engineer, he was a boat measurer, and he was just really on about safety. And he was a guy that started hauling boats over to see if they'd pop back up again, inclination tests or stability tests and so forth. And then after 98, CYC had a review, there was a coronial inquiry, and more regulations were brought in to try and make it a lot safer. But mind you, 98, they were horrendous conditions. So, you know, things happen. It's like floods and people get washed away in floods and things like that we're not sort of really prepared for.
Exactly. Linda, I didn't want to harp on 98, but you just touched on it then. It was horrendous conditions. You've sailed 45 Sydney to Hobarts. You've no doubt sailed into some horrendous weather. But why was 98 so bad?
Well, there was two main factors. Is one, there was an incredibly intense low pressure system that rolled out through Bass Strait into the southern Tasman Sea. And the other thing is we had a very strong current running down the coast. Typically, there's a current, the East Australian Current. You've seen the movie Finding Nemo, so the EOC is fact. And that year, it was running very, very strongly. So when the current running south met the winds blowing back from the southwest, blowing up north against each other, they built up really big seas, and it was just huge waves that probably we've never had before. I sailed in the 84 race, which was pretty bad, as was the 93 race. Mm. But it seems to me that, you know, 98 was the worst sea conditions that have been seen in a race.
Mm. I wanted to ask you about 93. I was reading the story of John Quinn, who went overboard on another yacht, and you responded to the call for help. And I think he was picked off by a tanker in the middle of the night. That's just extraordinary, Lindsay.
It is the most remarkable story. You guys have done your research. Mm. 93, I was on a yacht called Atara, which was an Irish boat. She was an Australian boat, but owned by an Irishman and with a part Irish crew. And we lost our mast on the night of the 27th. We were just getting into Bass Strait, and we were hit by a huge wave. Mast went over the side. It took us some time to get rid of it. And then when we got back on the radio again, I heard that there was a man in the water about 23 miles to the northeast of us. Now, that boat was in a bit of strife. We'd been bashed on the side by the mast, and we had the side of the hull was sort of working away. But, you know, you just got to go and do that. So we went out, and this tanker, the Ampol Sorrel, which had been standing by whilst the people had got off another yacht, was called back into the area. And it was about like 4:30 in the morning, 4 o'clock. It was dark. And they had a watchman on watch with a searchlight, and he picked up the reflective tapes on John Quinn's vest. He didn't have a life vest on. He just had a float, what we call a float coat.
Wow.
And he sort of yelled out, I see you. And so on the radio, they came up, and it's Ampol Sorrel, and they just said, we've got him, we've got him, we've got him. And I said to the guys on our boat, let's go to Eden. We're about 100 miles from Eden. Let's get out of here. They've got him. And then I thought, how does a tanker pick a bloke up out of the water? And the next call came up and said, he's passing down our port side. And I thought, right, of course he is. Anyway, Peter Messenger on the helm took a bearing on the tanker. I called him up, said, how far away are we? We're about 2 miles away. And we got in there, and blow me down, we just about nearly ran over him.
Wow. Incredible.
And am I right, Lindsay, in saying that you were trying to get an understanding of how much damage there was to your boat when you pulled John out of the water? Is that right?
Oh, yeah. We ripped out bunks, and we shored the side of the boat up with the bunks to try and stop, you know, to keep it intact. You know, it was just the most amazing thing. And getting him back on board, we had to put a man in the water and bring him up over the stern and so forth. But
and was he able to give you an understanding of? Because I think there's a famous quote from John, isn't there?
When
he was...
there is. So we got him down below, and one of the guys, Bill Sykes, said to him, he said, John, he was along the side of the boat for a while, and we got a rope around him. He had the rope around his neck, and I remember him saying, you're choking me. And Sykes, he said, I don't care what I'm doing. I'm not letting you go. Plus, we had one of our guys fall in at the same time that this was going on, in addition to the man that we put in the water. And we got him down below, and a little bit later, he had a cup of tea, and Sykes, he said to him, mate, while you were sort of bouncing along the side of the boat, did you notice all the delamination on the hull, all the damage on the hull? And he said, when the ambulance arrives, you don't check out the condition of the Duco.
That's a great line, isn't it? Such a great line. Lindsay, on Boxing Day, you're sailing in. The boat is kilo or two. It's the heaviest boat in the fleet. The weather conditions apparently are fairly light winds most of the race. What are you expecting from kilo or two?
Mm. Okay, so kilo is an old boat. She was built in 1964 for a famous American sailor, Jim Kilroy, who came out here with kilo or two in 71. She took line honours. Then he came back in 75 with kilo or three and set a record that stood for 21 years. She's heavy, 45 tons, so she needs a lot of breeze to get going. Mm-hmm. And as you say, the latest forecast today, the models that we use are sort of really neck and neck with one another. They're totally opposed, And we're looking like having light airs northeasterly to start, but then easing off, and there's a southerly coming through, not a weak southerly. And round in the Bass Strait area, it looks very, very confusing. There's two high-pressure systems that are apart from each other. So in the middle of those two high-pressure systems, you're going to get the breeze all over the place.
Yeah.
down pressure, and then they will join up, and that will give you good breeze. I think the big boats are probably going to have good breeze all the way down. They go fast in anything, just about. Mm-hmm. And then when we get off the Tassie coast, then another little high-pressure system forming, and in the middle of that, there's not going to be a lot of breeze. So I think for us, it's going to be a slowish race. Mm-hmm. And I guess the winners, probably the handicap winners, will come out of the bigger boats. I think they'll hold a good breeze and get on down the coast and miss that lighter stuff on the 29th.
Mm. I know you put a get your updates from the Bureau of Meteorology, which we do the weather here on a Sunday
morning. Jimmy's not a fan, Lindsay, I can tell you.
They're all over, Lindsay, they're all over the place. How much credence are you placing what sort of intel you're getting from the Bureau of Meteorology?
Oh, they're great.
I'm glad you said that, Lindsay, because Jimmy spends every week bagging the people at the BOM, and they do their best.
Well, the weather comes from the west, right? The main thing is that our weather comes from the west, so you can look at what's happening in the Bite, you know, the Great Australian Bite, or yeah. WA, and that's what we're doing now. We're looking at that. But we also use, I use a guy by the name of Roger Badham, Roger Clouds Badham. He's famous. He does Olympics. He does Volvo around the world, the New Zealand America's Cup and so forth, as a weather router. And he, every day, gives us his opinions. And then on the morning of the race, he gives us the information. Once we start, we can't get information from him anymore. We're on our own.
Right.
And then we are looking at the BOM, at the Bureau of Meteorology.
Good luck.
You know, working out...
He's a hard man, Lindsay, I tell
you. Look, I found them to be pretty good. But, of course, you know, here we are now. Like Thursday, they came out with their long-range forecast, which looked like nor'easter all the way. But we know that is long range, even you know, at that stage, sort of 6 days out. Every day, obviously, you get closer to it, you've got a better idea of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's a common sense approach, James. You should learn that off.
I love the way his nickname's Clouds. He works at the Bureau of Meteorology.
Hey, Lindsay, we'll be watching you and Kealoha very closely, obviously, but what are the other boats for our listeners they should be watching out for? And indeed, is it prudent to ask you for a tip?
I can give you tips. I can't bet, that's all.
That's okay, right. Yeah.
Well, in the big boats, of course, Comanche is probably the fastest boat, but Comanche needs heavier weather, which you probably will get, stronger breezes. If it goes very, very light, she's a bit sticky. Mm-hmm. She's got a huge surface area, so she sticks in the water a bit. Wild Oats, but the boat that I'm really impressed with is Blackjack.
Okay.
She's a similar size to Wild Oats, probably hasn't had as much surgery over the years. And in the big boat race a few weeks ago, I thought she performed really, really well. She hung on to Wild Oats 11. And then you've got Intratrack as being the former Perpetual Lloyd, a loyal.
That, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, 3 years ago. So they're probably the big boats. And then in handicap, you'd have to look at Itchy Barn, Matt Allen's boat, won last year on handicap. Top boat, top crew. But there's a host of boats through there. This is an incredibly strong fleet, and with some really, really good sailors in there. There's so many world-class sailors spread across this fleet. I think that's where the win is going to come from, in that 60, 52-foot range. I like a boat called Bush Paul Group. They've got a good handicap. Their rating's low, good crew, good boat, right conditions. They could do really well.
We'll cheer for Kealoha, Jimmy.
Yeah, we'll be cheering Kealoha too, Lindsay. Great to have you on the program. We do appreciate it. All the best.
Thanks,
for
Jimmy. Thanks,
Boxing Day and your 46th straight Sydney to Hobart. It's an outstanding record. Have a great time, Lindsay.
Right, you too. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Lindsay.
Lindsay May there, Navigator on Kealoha 2. And just incredible. OAM, by the way. Lindsay May.
Would you
May,
ever consider
OAM.
Doing that, Sydney to Hobart?
I would love to do it.
I would love to do it.
A Comanche, the $1.90 favourite at tab.com.au, but you heard the tip there. Blackjack, $7. $7. Wild Oats, $11 at $3.50.